Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
But what is clear is that it's absolutely imperative for Canadians to do what we can to shift our governments just over the top, once again, over the top, one-sided support for the oppressor.
That's the voice of Canadian author and activist Yves Engler, author of the book Canada and Israel Building Apartheid. On this week's show, we speak to Yves about the Palestinians' recent bid to become a state and what that means, so stay tuned.
Our identity, we as a country have created an identity that my next guest, Yves Engler, would argue perhaps is based upon a series of myths of who we are in the world and our role, our foreign policy plays in the world today. He is the author of many books. His latest book is Stop Sign, a very recent book which was just released in 2010, is Canada and Israel, Building Apartheid. Very happy to have you on our program, Yves. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you have written extensively on Canadian foreign policy. In 2009, you wrote an article that said that Canada had literally become Israel. Can you talk a little bit about our historical and our current policy and intervention in that region?
Historically, contrary to the mythology of Canada being an honest broker and, you know, even player between Palestinians and Israelis, that's not the case. Canada has long been a very one-sided advocate of Israel, and that goes back to the partition plan of 1947, where Canadian diplomats, particularly Lester Pearson, then the Undersecretary of External Affairs, the lead bureaucrat of External Affairs, worked feverishly to on two different United Nations committees to endorse the partition plan, as well as Canadian Supreme Court justice who was on the United Nations Special Committee on Palestine, which is what basically drew up the plan to divide the territory between the Zionist movement and Palestinians. And this is something that was bitterly resisted by the indigenous Palestinian population. They made up about two-thirds of the population, and in the partition plan that Canada backed and pushed, they received about 45% of the land. The Jewish population owned less than 7% of the land, yet received 55% of the land, according to the Canadian-backed partition plan. Canada was, you know, heavily involved in the creation of Israel and the subsequent sort of international legitimacy that was that Israel gained at the UN, which then led to the expulsion of most of the Palestinians living within what was supposed to be the Israeli state. So there's that history. There's a history that goes back even before that in terms of Zionism in this country. Actually begins as a Christian movement, and it was very tied in with more literal readings of the Bible and British imperialism, and that goes back into the 1860s, 1870s. There was one prominent Christian Zionist who was calling for a dominion of Israel as part of the British Empire, just like the dominion of Canada, but a Jewish state in the Middle East as part of the British Empire. So there's that history, which is really contradicts the mythology. And now, you going up to today, there's obviously lots and lots of examples that are detailed in the book, but going up to today, you have a Stephen Harper government at the United Nations doing its utmost to block a Palestinian Authority attempt to have a sort of nominal diplomatic recognition to have Palestine become the 194th member of the United Nations, and you have our government saying explicitly that they oppose this, but also lobbying other countries to vote against the Palestinian recognition. So there's a long history of this one-sided support. What you have with the Harper government is just a ramping up, more extreme version of this long, long history of one-sided Canadian support for Israel, despite the fact that Palestinians have been dispossessed. The Palestinians continue to be dispossessed by Israel and the mighty Israeli army.
I wanted to touch on something. You wrote an article in 2009 where it was clear that the world was outraged by the bombing of Gaza and how the Harper government had reacted to it. In your article, you write, Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper government publicly supported Israel's brutal assault on Gaza and voted alone in the UN Human Rights Committee in defense of Israel's actions 3 weeks ago. This was last in 2009 during that horrible incident where people were being exposed to chemical weapons. Today, the National Post, and I quote the writer Jonathan Crystal, has made this statement: the only way that Palestine will achieve a viable independent state is through direct negotiation with Israel. The pursuit of Palestinian statehood at the United Nations is a bad strategy for the Palestinian, and it's a testament to their continued poor leadership. How should we look at this in the face of that contextual history of aggression against Palestinian people and our constant support, I guess, from the Canadian government?
Yeah, I mean, there is the history of aggression, and that's not a history that's, you know, the case in two years ago where during 22-day assault against Gaza, Israel killed about 1,400 Palestinians, overwhelmingly civilians. So there's that kind of history of aggression. There was a Palestinian killed yesterday, another example of in the West Bank, Palestinian killed. They rarely get reported in the Canadian media, but there are Palestinians being killed in Gaza almost on a daily basis because Israel claims control over a sort of a barrier and lots of Palestinian farmers' land comes close to the barrier. So when they try to go till their land, they get attacked in different ways. So there's ongoing repression at that level. But I think the more important issue in terms of the idea of having a Palestinian state on 22% of historic Palestine, which is what the Palestinian Authority proposed at the UN yesterday, which is the 1967 borders, is that Israel continues not only to be violent militarily towards Palestinians, but continues to steal that land, to build settlements, to build enclaves within the West Bank that are for Israeli settlers, and which means effectively that a Palestinian state becomes impossible on that small strip of land. Same thing going on in East Jerusalem. There, even in a more aggressive form, where Palestinians in East Jerusalem, which is supposed to be the capital of the Palestinian state according to the 67 borders, Palestinians are being literally pushed out of East Jerusalem, and Jewish Israelis are replacing them, and that's being done with the Israeli government is the one pushing that. So what you have is you have 500,000 Israelis living on the land that's supposed to be for the Palestinian state. So in that context, when someone at the National Post says that the Palestinians need to sit down and discuss with Israel, well, so long as they can continue stealing the Palestinian land, there's no reason for them to change directions and actually offer a viable Palestinian state, because they're getting what they want, which is more of that Palestinian state. The issue about the Palestinian leadership is actually the complete reversal. The Palestinian Authority of Mahmoud Abbas is basically been a collaborating force with Israel in a very extreme way for the past 4 years, and the Canadian government is heavily involved in that process, where we've spent upwards of $100 million in Canadian aid to build the Palestinian Security Force to protect Abbas from his Palestinian political rivals, most importantly Hamas, but others as well, and to oversee Israel's occupation. And the official, the American general Keith Dayton, who was in charge of building this Palestinian Security Force until very recently, he says explicitly that the Palestinians, that we don't give anything to the Palestinians without Israel's authority, without Israel's okay. So So that, well, basically Canada is heavily involved in building up this Palestinian Security Force to one hand protect Abbas from his political rivals, and on the other hand to oversee the occupation. And there's a long, you know, history within the history of colonialism of locals doing the dirty work of the imperial or colonial force. You know, in India, it wasn't Brits who were in charge of the security, you know, at the high end of the security structure, for sure, but it was largely Indians who were in the place of being the sort of beat cop and the people overseeing, you know, sort of implementing the British policy. And that's something similar been going on in the West Bank with Canadian aid. And so when you have Stephen Harper right now opposing the Palestinian Authority's bid for the UN for UN recognition, it's important to note that this is how extreme the Harper government has gotten in its pro-Israel position, that it's opposing even its ally. Right, Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, his electoral mandate ended in January of 2009. This is somebody who does not have electoral legitimacy anymore, and we're still spending huge amounts of money to keep him in power. And the pro-Israel position of the Harper government is so extreme that they're even going against their own ally at the UN today.
I think it's important for people to realize what we're talking about here. You pointed out that Palestine today effectively has 22% of what used to be their historical territory. So 78% of that land has been already taken, stolen, occupied. And having these flexible borders of not knowing where the border is has enabled for the enactment of walls that now, you know, describe the lives of Palestinians as living in an open prison. Can you talk to the conditions that Palestinians are forced to live with today?
Well, first of all, when I say that Israel, Palestinians are looking for a state on 22%, that's what of historic Palestine. That's what they're looking for. What actually goes on right now is that Israel effectively controls 100% of historic Palestine, and all that the Palestinians Authority is now asking for is a return of 22% of that. In terms of the daily lives of Palestinians, it obviously, you know, varies quite significantly between different parts. So, for instance, in Gaza, there really is about 1.5 million people who live in a prison, you know, sort of a large prison where it's Israel has shut off most of the goods, and they control what's allowed in and out of Gaza, and they did that in complicity with the Egyptians. That has slightly improved since the international flotillas. Israel has sort of softened a bit of its controls over Gaza, still, you know, fairly nominally. So life in Gaza for the past few years has been, I think, by all accounts, pretty terrible, and there's lots of different human rights reports and UN reports that talk about malnutrition and health outcomes that are pretty bad. In the West Bank, in East Jerusalem, life is, I think, it's fairly different for Palestinians in those places. It's, for the most part, much more pleasant, if you like, or there's more freedom and within the West Bank that differs too. So the Palestinian Authority has nominal control over about a third of the West Bank, where Israeli forces for the most part don't enter, and it's Palestinian security forces that are in charge of security in those areas. And I think for the most part of recent life in those areas has been better. At the same time, you have villages, towns that are being expropriated by things like the wall that Israel started building six or seven years ago now, that cuts off lots of Palestinians from their lands, and it's supposed to be the security wall that protects Israel from Palestinians coming in to harm Israelis. But instead of building that within Israeli territory, the Israelis decided to build large large portions of the wall explicitly on Palestinian land, in some cases trying to bring in the major settlements on Palestinian post-67 land within the separation wall. It varies in different places. There are, in the West Bank, there is significant grassroots, nonviolent, political resistance in towns like Berlin, to the Israeli wall, and there is some level of ability of movement, but still, you know, often controlled by Israeli checkpoints. So that's one of the things that Israel's been doing, though, for the past decades, really, is splitting Gaza from the West Bank. And though Palestinians, that's the home of Palestinians, Israel is increasingly trying to disconnect, and that's even happening in a language here, and it is partly reflective of reality. Is there it's increasingly Gaza and the West Bank are being two different places, which further undermines Palestinian national aspirations.
Now, the Chinese government has come forward and said that being acknowledged as a state is the prerequisite to achieving peace in the region. How do you think the vote will go, and what would this mean for Palestine?
It's not exactly clear. There's a couple different parts to the vote. It appears that the Palestinians have the necessary two-thirds within the General Assembly to override an American veto in the Security Council. So they need about 129 votes at the General Assembly to override an American Security Council veto, which is expected. Americans have said in the Security Council they will veto a Palestinian recognition of Palestinian as a 194th state. It's not certain that the Palestinians have the necessary votes within the Security Council to win, which is nine. They need nine votes of 15 to force an American veto. That's not exactly certain. Americans are putting significant pressure on countries like Colombia, which is on the Security Council right now, to support Israel, putting significant pressure on countries like Bosnia Herzegovina, as well as I think Gabon is one of the others. Those are the three countries that have not exactly declared and are under pretty serious. Same thing with Portugal. What this will mean, I think, in large part, what this is about, what's positive about this, is it further exposes the American position. It shows just the U.S. It's never been some sort of broker between the two different sides, which it sort of presents itself to be, that some sort of equal sort of negotiator helping the two sides out, but in fact has always been a very strong supporter of Israel. And this is actually, I think, the 42nd or 43rd American veto on Israel issues. But this one has received significantly more international and particularly Western media attention than previous ones. Previous ones, Americans vetoed motions in support of Palestinian rights at the Security Council, and it largely went unreported within the North American media. That's different this time, and I think that's partly reflective of the growth in popular consciousness about the issue and about Palestinian rights and about there's much greater consciousness that Palestinians have been oppressed and deserve there needs to be some change in to Israeli policy. And you have that happening in Canada, where there's a poll, despite the Harper government's overwhelming one-sided support for Israel, despite all the rhetoric in the National Post and all the dominant media in support, basically, of Israeli policy. 46% of Canadians said they supported the statehood bid by the Palestinians, and only 25% opposed it. So it's a strong majority, a plurality in Canada that support Palestinian rights, despite all the media sort of onslaught in the other direction. So I think largely this is symbolic. There are many people within pro-Palestinian movements, obviously in Palestine and in the Palestinian diaspora, who are very critical of this statehood bid, who actually disagree with it for different reasons than what Stephen Harper disagrees with it. And that's tied to the fact that Abbas, the Palestinian Authority, has been working hand in hand with Israel for the past few years. That's partly tied to what this means for the right of return for the Palestinians who were expelled by Israel in 1947-48, their rights to return according to a variety of UN resolutions to return to their homes within Israel. And there's also question marks about what this means for the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which currently has rights to the UN to represent the Palestinians, and whether the Palestinian Authority, which only represents Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, and not all the Palestinian diaspora, including the refugees in the camps and different Arab countries, that what this means for them, and whether the Palestinian Liberation Organization is going to be pushed aside, and the Palestinian Authority is going to get greater representation in that you know, quite an undemocratic structure of the Palestinian Authority. So there are some major question marks. There are many within the pro-Palestinian movement are very critical of this statehood bid. But I think that from the standpoint of internationalizing the negotiation process, the moving it away from U.S. control, and also to in terms of just the symbolic nature of most of the world's population, including the biggest country in the world, like China, again, very publicly endorsing Palestinian rights, that's very important. Also, the Israelis are partly scared that if Palestine is recognized, they can then take Israeli officials to the International Criminal Court. And there are, you know, lots of examples of Israeli military and political officials that are, you know, responsible for war crimes. So one of the things this recognition could do is strengthen the Palestinians' ability to pursue Israeli officials in the International Criminal Court. So it's not exactly clear where this is all going to go, but what is clear is that it's absolutely imperative for Canadians to do what we can to shift our government's just over the top, once again, over the top, one-sided support for the oppressor in this conflict, for the Israeli government and Israeli military that continues to dispossess Palestinians.
I think that this takes two approaches, right? One is we need to make sure that our government's policies reflect what we as Canadians support, and that is a state of Palestine free to act and to enjoy the same rights that we as citizens enjoy. But on a personal level, what can people do? Can you talk about the divestment campaign that has been call upon by all citizens worldwide?
Yeah, there's been a call for going back to 2005 from Palestinian, more than 170 Palestinian social groups, civil society organizations, calling for international boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign of Israeli institutions, products, corporations, etc. That has really grown leaps and bounds over the past little bit. A very good article yesterday, actually, from Eric Wahlberg on Dissident Voice about a bunch of recent examples support of the BDS. I know that the Association of Canadian Independent Radio recently passed a resolution, but there's campaigns in a number of different cities on different you know, at this institutional level, in terms of getting your union or your social group or church group to endorse the BDS campaign. That's large in the Canadian context, because we live in quite a pro-Israel political climate. That is largely where the campaign is at. It's at a level of getting sort of progressive-minded institutions to start to endorse the call, and there's fairly little in terms of the concrete boycotting of different stores or different you know, institutions, whatever. In other countries, it's because they're less complicit, they're less tied in with Israeli policy. Things have moved, progressed further along. So, for instance, just yesterday or 2 days ago, there's an article about how a major Israeli a company in London, in London, England, had to move their store because of tickets, twice weekly tickets, for the past year and a half. So for individuals, I think the main thing is to get tied in with the different organizations that are organizing the BDS stuff, and there's groups like the Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, PJPME, the Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East. In Vancouver, there's CAN-PALMET, which is a very important pro-Palestinian organization, is to get involved in those groups who are organizing some of these campaigns. I know there was just a demonstration in Vancouver against the Israeli Foreign Affairs Minister just 2 or 3 days ago, and get involved in that. And on a personal level, there's also some things, you know, to do. So, for instance, the lead shareholders of Chapters Indigo Bookstore, they give money to Israelis, non-Israelis, who go fight for the Israeli military. So there's been a long-standing boycott of Chapters Indigo Bookstore. So that's, you know, one of the sort of very personal things people can do. It's not buy from Chapters Indigo. But I think the main thing that people need to do is get tied into the different organizations in their city that are organizing on this issue, and it's, you know, even small, even in like Nelson, D.C. There's a Palestinian end the occupation group. If this is going to be successful, we need groups in all the small towns and all the different numerous groups in all the different cities to be active. So get tied in with them.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. How can people access your books? You have several books out. You just released your latest book, Stop Signs, Cars, and Capitalism on the Road to Economic, Social, and Ecological Decay, which was released in 2011. And, of course, Canada and Israel Building Apartheid was released just last year in 2010. Can you tell our audience how they can access your books?
Always the independent bookstores online at turning.ca, which is a left-wing bookstore based in Saskatchewan. Or just go to my website, which is evengler.com, which is evesengler.com.
Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. That was Eve Zengler. He is the author of many books, including his latest, Stop Signs, Cars, and Capitalism on the Road to Economic, Social, and Ecological Decay.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.